Prepare to be captivated by the business story of the week, hosted by me, Shaheen Shan. Join us on a journey through the twists and turns of entrepreneurial triumphs and setbacks. Immerse yourself in the narrative and witness the magic that turns dreams into reality. This is Business Story of the Week.
And welcome back, folks. Welcome back to Business Story of the Week. I am your host, Joshua. And like we do every day, we unravel stories. And like the name suggests, Business Story of the Week, it's not just about business, it's about life as well. And we try to invite people and guests to inspire us in all facets of life when it comes to success, to struggles, to persevering through those struggles as well, and bravery. And today, we are about to meet perhaps the bravest person I've ever met. And I have a bravest person and bravest guest we'll probably have online. We have had several guests as well to talk about the same topic, but none as powerful and inspiring as Madeline Black, who is an author, speaker, and a sexual violence activist. She's a former psychotherapist and hosts her own podcast show called Unbroken, Healing Through Storytelling. Madeline Black's journey from sexual violence to surviving that, to becoming an advocate for healing, has been a path of empowerment and inspiration for a lot of people, especially a path for forgiveness. Through her work as an author, speaker, and podcast host, she continues to share her story to empower others to find their voices and reclaim their resilience. Madeline's commitment to ending shame, stigma, and silence surrounding sexual violence has earned her recognition, and including awards for her strength and dedication to supporting survivors. And today, ladies and gentlemen, she will be sharing her story of resilience and forgiveness to us. Madeline, I have been looking forward to this episode. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Joshua. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show.
It's fantastic. It's been great. I reached out to you and I was excited to have you on. I was really happy that you responded and accepted the invitation, because the message that you talk about is very important. We've had a lot of advocates on the show that talk about, you know, shame, the stigma, and surrounding that silence, like you said. And first off, before we really get into it, Madeline, we need to start from the very beginning. And I understand you've told this story many times, and so you could revise it whichever way you want. But I'd like to start from the beginning of the journey of the childhood and, you know, throughout the life of Madeline Black, and the things that happened that led you to confront your trauma and transform them into a message of hope and healing. What is the story of Madeline Black?
Yes, as you said, my story is one of sexual violence, so I will be discussing rape, obviously, with you. When I was 13, I was raped by two men. It was on a night out with a friend, and I did, I'm sure, what most people have done at some point in their life, when especially being a teenager, I lied to my parents about where I was staying. And my friend and I had her mum's empty flat, and we bought some alcohol, and I got very drunk, and two of the young men in the cafe we were at took us back to her mum's flat, but it became very clear they weren't really there just to put me in the bed and let me, you know, sleep off the alcohol. They were there for something more sinister, and they proceeded to rape and torture me over about a 4 to 5 hour period. And that's my story really in a nutshell, I suppose.
And Madeline, I understand that this is something that it took you a long time to talk about, naturally, of course.
Yeah.
And especially from your book, it says Unbroken, Healing Through Storytelling. Could you talk to us a bit about how long it took you to kind of gather all that the guilt, stigma, that self-doubt and everything? How did you bring yourself to accept what had happened, and even to start bringing yourself to start telling the story? I imagine it took a while.
Yeah, well, I didn't initially tell my parents for about 3 years because one of them, which I call the worst one, he threatened me and he said if I spoke about it, he would kill me or they would fine me. And he had already harmed me, he'd already stabbed me during that night. And I believed that he was more than capable. I was only 13. But to speak publicly, I really shared my story about 10 years ago with an organization called the Forgiveness Project, because there's elements of forgiveness in my healing path. And, you know, the founder, a woman called Marina Cantacuzuno, she asked to share my story on her website. And she said, I don't need to put my photo and I don't need to put my name. I could be anonymous. And up until that moment, I'd taken part in some press, you know, but I was always anonymous. I just had a silhouetted face, maybe just said my first name. But I'd got to the point, I had had a lot of therapy, and I just thought, I shouldn't be ashamed anymore. Why should I still be ashamed? You know, it was a crime committed against my body. I'm not saying it was an easy decision, but I decided to share my name and my photo. It was September 2014, so it was 10 years ago nearly, and I've never looked back. Wow. Because I think the shame kept me quiet for all those years, but by exposing my story, the shame can't exist. You know, it can't exist when you bring it to the light. It can't have a hold on me anymore. But if I keep it secret and I don't speak about it, then it has a hold on me. So by stepping into my shame, it helped to crack my shame.
That what a beautiful way to put it. I love that. And in one of your TEDx talks, you mentioned, where you talked about the allegory, you compared the allegory of holding a beach underwater for a very long time. You compared it to the fear of shame and others knowing your story. And like you said, like putting yourself out in the light, you're actually, you stopped giving power to that shame. But more than that, there's actually this building pressure when you keep it all under there, you keep the water under there, and it's just, it's going to manifest in all different ways. And I think part of that strength is actually, and that bravery actually, is really putting a face on that shame so you could end that stigma as well. And I thought that was very, very important. Madeline, I want to talk a little bit about your work with the Forgiveness Project. As a storyteller, you touch the lives of many individuals grappling with trauma and trying to survive that trauma. What were the impactful moments? And could you talk to us a little bit about that very first time that you revealed your identity when you started talking about your story? How does it, go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, the first time was on their website, and I was amazed by the effect it had. You know, Marina doesn't call us storytellers. She calls us story healers, which I think is a fabulous word, because I really believe in the power of sharing our stories. You know, there's many, many different types of stories on her website. You know, people have overcome so much. They've transformed their pain into something positive. It doesn't hold them back in any way. And I just, you know, I really felt it once I shared my story. I wasn't quite sure what it meant. But, you know, straight away, friends got in contact because they maybe knew something but didn't know all the details, or some didn't know all the details. They didn't know it was near fatal. And then people, acquaintances got in contact with me when I shared my story. The people I didn't know. And then people started telling me their stories. And people were telling me their stories. And they said, I've never told this to anyone before. And people from different countries. And in a few weeks, I couldn't keep up with all my messages and my inbox was going crazy. And just, I just saw that my story is just a story of many, many, many people on this planet. You know, every day a man, a woman, a child will be sexually abused, raped in some way. And that I saw the power that comes when we share our stories, not just for the storyteller, but for the person listening to the story or reading it, just to help them belong, to know they're not alone, to know this is sadly common, and you know that there is hope as well, that you know, if she can speak about it and survive, then maybe I could speak about it and get some help and live my best life rather than holding myself back because I'm too ashamed to speak.
That is true. And like you said, that fear of speaking is not actually just holding you back, but it's actually holding back other people, right? And like you said, you are called story healers. It's beautiful because the effect that came after giving, you know, you know, revealing your identity, giving a face to that story, actually gave power to others to heal from their stories as well. And, you know, yeah. We love stories in here, and there's nothing more powerful than a story that heals other people as well. And through relating to other people and people, you know, trying to find out more and being educated about this, one of the things that you said in your TED talk is like, how do you ask the right questions, right? And the right question, the usual question is like, what's wrong with you? And which is wrong. It's not a right thing to ask. It should have been, what happened, right? It's putting ourselves in the shoes of the individuals and trying to end that kind of stigma so they are able to talk about it a bit more, right? What were the biggest changes that you see now that you are able to, I guess my real question would be is, how long did it take it to be really comfortable, right? Because I bet once you started revealing your identity, your face, it wasn't comfortable right away. But now you, and I watch your other videos as well, and I talk to you right now, and it just feels like you are absolutely at peace with it, and you are very comfortable.
Yeah.
How long did that take?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm nearly 60, and this happened when I was 13. So I've done a lot of therapy. I didn't get to this place overnight. If anyone is listening, you think, how can she be like that? It's a process, you know. It's peeling back the layers and peeling back the layers and peeling back the layers till you just get to the core, the essence that I was born with. That can never be touched by whatever is done to us. So I learned really through therapy that I'm not what they did to me. You know, I'm not my body. All of us are not the events in our life. We're so much more than what happens to us. But for a long time, I incorrectly thought if anybody knew, then they would look at me differently. You know, they wouldn't want to know me because I had really, really low opinion of myself. I just thought I was worthless. And because they degraded me, I felt just a less than human being. But over time, and with support from brilliant people and trying many different therapies and then, you know, finding my voice and speaking out, I think as soon as I spoke out publicly, I was really okay. You know, the very first time I spoke, it was at a university in England in Kiel, and the smoke alarm went off in the middle. Someone burnt the toast in the kitchen. I was doing an event.
Really?
And
okay.
Yeah. And as soon as I opened my mouth, I thought, you know, I was a little bit nervous before because I still get a little bit of stage fright. But once I started speaking, I just thought, it's not about me anymore, you know. It's about who is listening. It's not about me speaking. And that's what drives me, you know, just to... I'm just the vessel. I just use my voice to help other people, really. I just feel if I can speak, then it's almost like my duty, my purpose in life, that that's what I'm here to do.
And that's,
if that makes sense.
Once again, very, of course, right. It's a very beautiful message. And I always also say, it's like sometimes, you know, when I'm out there, when I'm speaking to other people, when I'm, you know, training or coaching them, and I always say, like, I'm not a perfect person, you know, and these things that I teach aren't always something that I apply in my life. But at the end of the day, I am a messenger. I am just a messenger in this life.
Yeah.
And, you know, the things that we live, the things that were done to us, those are not who we are. And I think that's beautiful. And trying to come to that state where we can bring ourselves into the limelight and send that message is more powerful than actually hiding. What was that quote by Marianne Williamson? There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that others don't feel insecure around you. And nothing is more powerful than this story of being assaulted, surviving through that assault, and how others can be more aware. Because it's one thing to give power and awareness to the women who has experienced the same trauma, surviving the same trauma, but I feel like it's also another thing to have men be aware. Right? You have men be educated. In your interview with Andrew Gold, you mentioned 1 in 4 women, or 97% of women, have been assaulted. And you even mentioned, like, maybe the remaining 3% just press the wrong button, because it would be, you know, they might have been assaulted in some way, but, you know, again, they can't speak up about it, they can talk about it.
And also we diminish what happens to us, you know, we underplay it. So when I was writing my book, I didn't realize I had been raped 3 more times. I just thought I behaved The way I responded after is I became very promiscuous I just thought I had a lot of bad sex, but it's just a normal, one of the many side effects of being raped. Mm-hmm. And I just never really looked at it until I wrote my book and I thought, oh, there was definitely no consent on those three occasions. So many people, you know, recognize this as well in their life. People have contacted me and said, I don't recognize the first time it happened to you. That was very violent. But the other times, you know, I said no and they said yes and they just carried on. So there's so many blurry, you know, messages around consent. You have to be very, very clear that, yes, mm-hmm. you want to go ahead. So every girlfriend of mine, every friend, daughter, sister I know has had some inappropriate behavior from men towards them. I don't know anyone that hasn't.
And that's because I believe it's, again, it's a stigma that it's a woman's fault. Right, it's you. It's how you acted. It's how you were dressing. It's how you were, and that's why it's so easy to diminish that. Because, like, oh my goodness, I'm sorry, it was me. You know, I cost you to act that way. And I think that is a very important education to shift among everyone, especially men. Because in your interview with Andrew Gold, I think he mentioned is like most men just don't realize this staggering number. I feel like if you mentioned to most men that like almost 100% of women had been assaulted in some way, I feel like there's some level of awareness that can be raised in that, you know, how do we lift that stigma? Because it's not important for just women and survivors to start talking about it. It's more men that should start being aware about it. How far do you think we've come when it comes to this? How far do you think it's come to the point where, number one, women are talking about it a little bit more? And today, how do you feel are men being more aware and being more accepting about, you know, about the protecting women and, you know, the rate at which these assaults are happening? Has there been any significant progress in your experience?
It would be great to say yes, wouldn't it? But I don't really think we've moved that far. Yes, maybe more of us are speaking out, but then we just hear more stories. And in the UK where I am, you know, the judicial system is awful. So of all cases that might go to court, I live in Scotland, I think 4% might end in a conviction. So it really is as if rape has been decriminalised. You know, it's really, you can rape someone and really not much will happen to you of the 15% of women that will go ahead and report it, because most people never end up reporting it. I never reported any of the rapes that happened to me. And what you spoke about before, how we feel guilty, there's so much victim blaming in our culture, the rape culture that goes on, where why it's very intimate crime, but it's why we're supported by society. Well, what was she wearing? What was she drinking? Blah, blah. So we need to work on these myths and these incorrect beliefs that the victim was at any fault. Because we all know that drink or clothes, whatever, do not cause rapes. 100% of all rapes are caused by rapists and nothing else. It doesn't matter what you're wearing, what you were drinking, how old you are, because we know babies and nappies are raped. We know women in burqas are raped. So, you know, it wasn't their clothes. But we have to find a way, I don't know how, to maybe educate all children from a young age about healthy relationships, about respect, about consent, boys and girls, you know, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. We need to have a better court system as well. It needs to be taken seriously, because it feels like it's not taken seriously in the UK. It's hardly, the conviction rates are such a small percentage that why would you go to court? Because it's so re-traumatizing and you're put on the stand and you're made to look guilty, you know. There's many, many changes that need happening. Sometimes I get very tired of all and I think, oh, it's just a never-ending battle. But then I think, nope, we just need to carry on.
It's true. It's a battle that never ends. It's a battle that needs to be fought, because who else would fight it if it not for the survivors themselves?
I think things are slightly better. When I think of like my mum's generation, you know, it would have been normal for her at work for her boss to pinch her on her bottom, or, you know, my girls will never know that kind of environment. It would be normal, I mean, from a different kind of thing. If she got pregnant, she would have to leave her job, you know. So things have changed. It is a bit better. There's more opportunities for women in work, but there's still a lot that needs to be changed.
That is true. Like, as far as perhaps rights and benefits, it truly has improved in these many years. And but as when it comes to protection, so to speak, right? Protection and like prioritizing women, it really is, and it really starts from, like you mentioned, education and teaching children, teaching boys consent, respect, healthy relationships, and those are things that needs to change. And it, I believe it also goes hand in hand with the judicial system, right? Like regulations, right? And it's, and it's a lot, because I feel like those who are still in charge, or those who are stuck in that decade where it was more acceptable to judge women or to make them more feel guilty. And I feel like at least it's changing. At least there are more people, you know, talking about it. There are more warriors and more survivors fighting that battle, even though it seems never ending. Madeline, there we have a lot of audience and listeners that are women as well. And I understand, of course, that maybe some of them, certainly some of them, are actually struggling with these same things. And I remember, and I love this, because part of your TED talk, you said your greatest revenge was living your best life and your family and having your family and having your daughters. And talk to us a little bit about that. Talk about the process of, like, not just healing through therapy, not just healing through telling your stories, but your revenge of living your best life when it comes to overcoming your trauma.
Sure. So when I met Stephen, my husband, about 41, nearly 42 years ago, a long time ago, I told him before, a long time, I told him before we got married that I would never become a mum. I was, the idea of giving birth, I still carried so much trauma, I just thought would be too violent. It would be like being raped again. And I was very scared of everything, actually. I was very paranoid around being around men, being out of control, and the idea of giving birth just, it ticked a lot of boxes for my fears. So I just thought easiest way is not to do it. So we used to go away every year, and we were in Thailand, actually. We were on the beach, a beautiful island, Koh Phi Phi, and we were walking along. We married a couple of years, and he just said, you know, how about starting a family? And I was just ready to have an argument and say, you know, I told you I couldn't do that. And something, I don't know what it was, something just came into my mind. And I just thought, you know, if I don't ever become a mum, then they've won. They don't know they've won, but I'm handing all my power and control to these men. You know, they've had no idea I'd be doing that. And in that moment, I just thought, I will have children. They are not going to take that away from me just because of what they did to me. So I was determined not just to become a mum, but I thought, I can't let this be a cloud over me forever. I would always have my head in that space. If I'm going to be a mum, I've got to be the best one that I can do, you know, be. And I didn't want to corrupt my children in any way. So I thought, I'm going to live my best life. You know, we're just, when I think of the world and the existence, it's here for billions of years. And I think I'm only here for about 10 seconds, 10 nanoseconds even. And I think, am I going to spend my 10 nanoseconds consumed with all the hurt and the disappointment and carry my story with me forever? Or am I just going to be here and have a joy, loved-filled life? And that's what I want to do. I want to have my best life before it's over. You know, it's too quick, just like that.
Of course.
Yeah.
And again, like you said, this is how you take back your success, your victory, so to speak. This is how you kind of put that flag into your life where, nope, you're not going to have power over me. I am going to take this power right now. And that's beautiful. And it's a beautiful message for our audience and listeners. I want to talk a little bit more about the aspect of forgiveness, because some of our audience and listeners might feel that they cannot heal until they've forgiven. And it's very difficult to forgive, especially the harder and more violent the trauma is. Could you talk to us a bit about that? How did you lead yourself or get yourself to the point of forgiving the ones who assaulted you?
Yeah, I have to say I never intended to forgive them. I kind of call myself an accidental forgiver, you know, because I, before I forgave them, my life was, I was a mum. I've got three girls now. I was married, but I was filled with hate. I was plotting revenge against them in my head. I was sarcastic. I was bitter. looking back, I thought I was really good. I was a bit like a swan, you know, I looked all elegant above, but underneath my feet were paddling like crazy. So I wasn't really very present because I was still consumed by what had happened. And when my eldest daughter, Anna, turned 13, I was also studying psychotherapy and I was doing lots and lots of personal development. And I understand now, obviously, my memories returned. But then I just thought I must have made it up because all the memories that came back were not ones that I remembered. So it was everything I had repressed. But Anna, I think, was the trigger, or she was the trigger. And so I had to go back to therapy because it was just too much for me to cope with. And near to the end of about 3 years I had with that therapist, he just made a comment to me, you know, maybe they weren't born rapists, these two men. And I was like, oh, how could he say something so stupid? I just thought they were sadistic animals. but then he made me think.
I feel the anger.
I became really curious and I wanted to understand, because I do believe all babies are just blank sheets. You know, we all come into this world innocent babies, but we get corrupted or we get conditioned, we get influenced in our life. And then I thought, what had happened to them? Because they weren't that much older than me, maybe 18, 19, to make them behave so violently towards another human being. How could they degrade and humiliate somebody so much? And I realized when they're degrading me, they're degrading themselves as well. Be able to do that level of violence towards someone else. And somehow, don't ask me where, but I felt compassion in my heart. And I just thought, you know, I've done a really, really good job of cleaning up the trauma and I'm living a good life. But they, to live with what you did to someone else, I just thought, that's got to be harder. That must be so much harder to live with that. Even if they're not aware, consciously, it must come out of them in some way. Like I didn't, I wasn't aware of my memories, but the way I was behaving over the years, it leaks out of you. It's got to come out of you. And so I just thought that, you know, I could choose, I could make a choice. And I want to say, you know, I'm not a forgiveness preacher. I don't tell people that forgiveness is the only way. There's many paths to healing, but this is just what I chose to do. And it means many things to me. It was total acceptance of my situation, knowing I couldn't change it, because I argued and argued with the memories for years and I saw I could drive myself crazy. You know, my arguing and denying what took place, because I thought it was a reflection of me and people would also look at me differently, like the shame. But then I saw, as we mentioned, I'm not what they did. That also came to me as well. That's just my body. I'm not my body. I'm not my name. You know, the essence in me that remains untouched. It's just been my journey of revealing it and getting back into my body, really. And I just saw that forgiveness was a way of understanding them, letting it go, being at peace, knowing I could never, ever change it, and just... You know, it's just much easier from this side of my anger.
Of course.
It just cracked something inside of me when I made that choice. It just was like, you know, I deserve peace after all these years. I've got to put down my weapons that I was attacking myself with. And so that's why I chose forgiveness. Not for them. I didn't need to meet them. They don't need to be my friend. I don't ever need to sit down and have lunch with them or anything, you know. But for me, I thought... And everyone, for my kids and my family, my husband, my friends, I need peace in my life. And hanging on to all that hate and that hurt and that disappointment was just actually, it was poisoning me, really poisoning me. And forgiveness was my medicine. It really was.
Wow. That's a beautiful way to put it, Madeline. I'm always an advocate when I tell people that closure doesn't mean you have to meet the person. Closure doesn't mean you have to sit
down. I'm never going to meet them.
Of course, never meet them. You know, you don't have to. But you don't have to sit down and have tea. You know, even if we're not talking about assault or trauma, you know, closure doesn't have to involve a sense of, you know, you don't have to feel obligated to forgive someone. But that forgiveness is actually more for you. And I love that. Yeah. I love that you're saying that you're carrying these poisons, these weapons, that you're hurting yourself and that you deserve peace. And I want to remind our audience and listeners the same, that we all deserve peace. We deserve that peace in our lives, and our loved ones, the people who are in our lives, deserve the same kind of peace. Madeline, as we near this, and I of course want to keep you around a bit more, but I cannot do that. But as we near this end of this, your message, one of your messages that you mentioned, it is never too late to find your voice. It is, of course, incredibly empowering. Can you share a specific moment or experience that reinforced this message for you? And when did that kind of line or that message came to you, that it's never too late to find your voice? And when did you really start, you know, like finding your voice, and how did it influence your journey into talking more about healing and advocacy?
Yep. So just before I was going to share my story online, there was somebody I also know from the Forgiveness Project, and she was going to go to prison to meet the man who had raped her. He was a serial rapist, and he had escaped from prison, or he was out on parole, I think. And I just thought, God, that was incredible. So, you know, I think courage is really contagious. I was just moved by her courage, which allowed me to go public. And I'm just paying that forward. So I have an amazing woman who was a friend of mine now, Debbie. She was recommended to read my book and watch my first TEDx by her therapist. And then she got in contact with me. I met her at an event, actually. And she was very shy when she came over. She was, you know, really nervous, and she was fine in the end. And when I read, when she told me a little bit about her story, then I realized there were a lot of similarities. And she has gone on now to write her own book. And she said she would never have done that if she hadn't met me or listened to my talk or read my book. So I just think it's the ripple effects. You know, I was moved by someone else who gave me courage. I'm planting that seed of courage in her. She's now written a book. She's planting, lighting little fires everywhere as well. Beautiful. And giving people, you know, it's like giving someone a different map, you know, a different way forward, which is what hope is, I think. You know, you get very stuck, and you can't see any way out, and someone can shine a light, whether that's forgiveness or acceptance, understanding, compassion. It just gives you a whole new map to do your life. And she's done that now, and I'm incredibly proud. I opened up a parcel one day from Amazon, and it was her book, and it was like, wow, amazing.
That is beautiful. It must have been a very validating experience, and of course a beautiful experience to know that others are being empowered to tell their own stories and finding their own voice in the midst of this just incredible, you know, challenges and hurdles and trauma in their lives. Madeline, I want to give you this opportunity. Where can we connect with you? Where can we find you? But more than that, I like to wrap up this question in like, what are the future aspirations of Madeline Black? How do you see yourself? Tell us in the future, empowering women, and where can we stay updated in your future plans?
Sure. Well, I never really make many plans, I have to say. I like to now just to go with the flow, because I used to be so obsessed with being in control. So I will carry on being a professional speaker. I will carry on doing book events. And if you just find me on social media, or you can go to my website, madelineblack.co.uk, you'll find me there, or just LinkedIn, wherever. Just find me somewhere. I'll be there.
All right, fantastic. Madeline, it's been a great, great interview. And, you know, I am empowered. I am inspired by your bravery. You are, by the way, called the Courage Cultivator for our audience and listeners out there. I believe it is very apt. You know, like you said, courage is contagious. And you have truly, you know, presented that courage with us, and that motivation, that inspiration. And I'm sure I speak for our audience and listeners to say that, you know, we're very happy to have you here today.
I was very happy to be invited. So thank you so much, Joshua. It's been great speaking to you too.
Fantastic. And to our audience and listeners out there, see you on the next one.
All right. So here's the thing. We try to get a little bit better every day, but we can't do it without you. So if you like the video, make sure to like and subscribe below. And if you have any comments, just leave them in the space under.